The following audio recording is adapted and excerpted from the book Conquering Concussion, Healing TBI Symptoms with Neurofeedback and Without Drugs. This award-winning book reviews and explains the side effects of traumatic head injury, TBI. These symptoms include headache, impulsive actions, fatigue, confusion, problem with concentration and slowed thinking, insomnia, anxiety, anger, explosiveness, phobias, dizziness, mood swings, indecision, light sensitivity, slowed speech, depression, nightmares, risky behavior, flashbacks, and PTSD, which is more likely and more severe following a head injury. Another common symptom is abnormal sweating day and night, but it has nothing to do with temperature. It is a sign of a damaged autonomic nervous system. There may also be constant feelings of cold from a damaged endocrine system. All of these symptoms come from a damaged brain. In 2000, British military historian Ben Shepherd, in his book The War of Nerves, wrote of soldiers returning from war. They put on civilian clothes again and looked to their mothers and wives very much like the young men who had gone to business in the peaceful days before August 1914. But they had not come back the same men. Something had altered in them. They were subject to sudden moods and queer tempers, fits of profound depression alternating with a restless desire for pleasure. Many were easily moved to passion where they lost control of themselves. Many were bitter in their speech, violent in opinion. Frightening. That was after trench warfare of World War I. In today's war, soldiers are hit with bullets, grenades, shrapnel, and impacted by improvised explosive devices, IEDs. They have been rolled and crushed in their blasted vehicles, fallen from trucks and guard towers, been exposed to toxins including immunizations, depleted uranium, fumes from vehicles, burning oil fields, refineries, and trash pits. They have done all this in searing heat, often in body armor and packs that sometimes exceeded their own body weights. In today's wars, mothers and wives and friends and employers are surprised that veterans, after the most ghastly experiences, are damaged. Veterans are surprised at their own symptoms. Medical workers are surprised that problems remain for years or forever, no matter how hard they have tried to help. Part of the problem is that injuries are so varied, from bullets to explosions. Strangely, blast injuries are often the worst, but may show no outward physical signs at all, no hint to the chaos within. At the microscopic level, there is a very real damage that impairs the ability of the brain to function, to heal and change, to learn and to remember what has been learned. In 2011, Dr. Bennett Amalu turned his attention to deceased military veterans who had faced blasts from mortars and IEDs and been diagnosed with PTSD. One was a Marine who, after his second deployment, developed progressively worsening problems with memory, behavior and mood, insomnia, and alcohol. At 27, 8 months after his honorable discharge, he committed suicide. On autopsy, his brain looked perfectly normal, no atrophy, no wounds. But a closer exam revealed broken and tangled nerve cells, the same changes Dr. Amalu had seen in the brains of dead NFL football players. The following accounts present the personal details of veterans who have entered a treatment study to evaluate effects of neurofeedback on concussion and PTSD. Even after standard medical care with intense individual and group therapy, many vets still suffered difficulties with memory, anger, and hypervigilance. Many could no longer read or sleep, and many had considered suicide. And yet, within a few sessions of neurofeedback, they experienced rapid, sometimes astonishing, improvements. Several subjects dropped out early because they were so improved that they saw no reason to continue. They and others like them are the reason why clinicians are so adamant that neurofeedback is effective and why they are so passionate about their work. Here are case histories of Jay and David and Mike. What happened to them, how they healed their most devastating symptoms, and how they got their lives back. Jay was career military with 14 years in the Army. He was trained to drive anything except a tank. But in Iraq, he was never used as a driver. Instead, he was placed as a gunner. In the course of two tours of 5 months and 18 months, and exposed to constant explosions and firefights, he survived 9 IED explosions, 3 with the loss of consciousness for 20 to 30 minutes. In one incident, his vehicle was blown into the air. He crash-landed back onto the truck in full body armor and gear, a total body weight of nearly 260 pounds. Another explosion blew fragments of a heavy steel blast door into his leg. Jay was left in a wheelchair in terrible pain. Multiple concussions, broken bones, and a leg full of shrapnel required several corrective surgeries. There was severe anxiety and PTSD. Seeing small piles of dirt or debris beside the road, typical hiding places for IEDs, triggered severe panic attacks. And whatever the temperature, he was always sweating, especially at night. Both long and short-term memories were severely damaged or missing. He couldn't remember a day or date for more than a few seconds and had to check his watch constantly. He couldn't remember his children's ages at all. False memories were as true to him as real ones. He remembered being posted in North Carolina, where he had never actually been. He even disliked foods that he had favored before Iraq. Peas with onions had been a favorite dish. Now he couldn't stand it. Because of his memory problems, he couldn't drive. Previously, his navigational skills had been so good that his unit, on foot, in the dark, in strange territory, had always relied on him to get them home again. And he always did. Now these skills were gone. For Jay, it was like going blind. Severe and constant headaches were treated with Tramadol and Percocet, but not even these powerful drugs could control the pain. Reading was impossible. More than a few lines made the headaches even worse, and he couldn't remember what he had just read. He was especially distressed by the extreme fatigue and explosive hair-trigger temper, knowing he had never been like that before. Even after finishing a specialized care program, he still suffered full-blown PTSD symptoms with nightmares. In spite of lithium and Zoloft, he was depressed and suicidal. Impact on the family was enormous. Because he couldn't remember the simplest steps of daily family schedules, all family responsibility fell on his wife. She said she no longer knew him.
On entering the neurofeedback study, Jay was a wreck, both physically and emotionally, and yet his response was fast and positive from the first sessions on. At the beginning, we always ask, how will you know you are better?
Well, my memory would be better.
On starting treatment, session one triggered a big headache that quickly dropped. Afterwards, he slept well, feeling unusually rested when he awoke. Energy and mood were good, memory better. He even felt happy for about 2 hours the next morning, but while showering began to feel the same way he had felt before missions. That is, physically up, with an adrenaline rush, and nauseated. This feeling lasted about 3 hours, followed by calm lasting through 2 days. After session two, even the dirt piles beside the road no longer bothered him. He slept like a rock and was surprised when asked about sweating. He hadn't noticed that the sweating had stopped. By session three, energy and mood were excellent, but this session also brought an immediate return of long-term memory. As the sensors were being removed from his head, Jay gasped and said he was remembering things. Suddenly, he knew the current day and date, phone numbers, birthdays and anniversaries, past postings, family occasions, and family memories that had been lost to him for years. His young son, wide-eyed, asked his father if he remembered going to the amusement park years before. Jay did remember, and as they talked about that day, the little boy just glowed with excitement. His joy at being able to laugh with his dad about their past experiences was thrilling to see. For the first time in years, they had a shared history, common ground, that until that moment had been lost to that boy and the entire family. Now he had his father back. His wife asked about being stationed in North Carolina. "We were never there," said Jay. but he now remembered previous tours, real ones, in Korea, the bases, and his buddies. Throughout the session, he was flooded with memories of family, his old car, high school sports, and suddenly he mentioned craving peas with onions. From this point on, after just 3 sessions, his first week of treatment, Jay never wrote down an appointment, and he never forgot one. He knew date and time without looking at his watch, and he could read again. Over the following week, he finished one book and started another. By week 2, sessions 4 to 5, body temperature was normal during the day and most nights. And then one day, while driving, his wife got lost. Suddenly, Jay could see the route in his head, and he guided her home.
Sleep, energy, appetite, and mood, all good. Now, instead of being angry, I have lots of patience.
Blood tests showed that previously therapeutic doses of Tramadol and Percocet are now overdoses. He needed only 1 Percocet over the entire weekend to control pain of surgery, and he had no headaches at all week.
Yes, and anxiety was also down. There's some, but nothing like previous reaction, you know, wanting to stop the car and get away, even though there's no real danger. I'm still bothered by crowds, you know, scanning for suspicious persons, activities, irritated by noise. But I'm so much more calm now, more than I've been in a long time, less fearful about the future. I'm beginning to see a life ahead. You know, I now have hope that I will be able to function for my family and for myself. The long-term memories that flooded back after session 3 remain. It was as if my brain opened and all the memories came gushing out, including the ones I wish I didn't have and hope to forget. But even those are way less intense. Now they're just memories, not flashbacks.
Session 6 to 9, Jay's physician stopped trazodone last week, and he's sleeping well without it and with no night sweats. He's physically stronger, going to the playground and into the water to play with his kids. At this time, the family moved into a 4-room apartment, and Jay slept 10 hours that night. He was upbeat, mood excellent, with clear conversation and good energy. Items he'd seen while unpacking brought back memories, and he was excited to find that he could remember their histories.
I'm getting back to my old self. Even my wife said so. She even told me she loves me and gave me a kiss.
Now, Jay was back in his wheelchair because of leg pain, but it was because of lifting furniture, doing repairs, playing outside with the kids, and doing more work than he'd done in a long time. Meanwhile, his doctor was tapering him off lithium and Zoloft. He's feeling clearer, and memory continues to improve. By sessions 10 to 17, he was sleeping all night through and waking with good energy. Thunderstorms reminded him of mortar fire, setting him on edge, but not panicked, and he no longer notices roadside rubbish. He's okay in crowds and beginning to talk about traumatic experiences in Iraq, because the emotional content is no longer as upsetting. On reaching session 18, though, Jay was depressed, but with good reason. He's losing vision in his left eye, cause unknown. Doctors can't operate on the shrapnel in his leg for fear of making it worse. And a third member of his group at Walter Reed shot himself. It was now that Jay admitted that on entering the neurofeedback study, he too had been planning suicide. He brought up an intense dream about Iraq, people he knew who had died, including 3 other soldiers who had asked for help and were told to make an appointment weeks or months away. All 3 suicided.
Now it feels good rather than possibly painful to talk about this with others. Now these are memories, not flashbacks.
After his 23rd session, just before the end of treatment, Jay flipped over backwards in his wheelchair, suffering a new concussion with possible skull fracture. Within the week, he was also diagnosed with lung cancer. He had surgery, but memory remained good with no return of headache or PTSD. Jay's symptoms had not worsened, a testament to the resilience that often appears with neurofeedback. By now, he was off all sleep and pain medications, taking only 2 of the 6 drugs he was on at the start of the study. On 6-month follow-up, even more remarkable improvements continued despite severe sleep apnea, untreated until after the study ended. The ongoing effects of toxic exposures during his service and the stress of regular treatments to drain fluids from his lungs. But he also commented on his life then and now.
My wife hated me. I hated me. I even hated my kids. Now my wife says she loves me, and I love her, and I love my kids. The biggest achievement of treatment is that it's given me back the feeling of being normal and human again. I can accept things that I can't change, but I feel good about myself. I can be part of my family, part of society. If I hadn't gotten this treatment, I would be on the verge of divorce. My kids hating me and I'm not caring. But now I can be a husband and a great father. You've given me back my life.
The journalist who covers war zones endures many of the same conditions and stresses as the soldier. The big difference between the soldier and the war journalist is that when they return, the journalist has no job-related support system waiting to help.
At age 22, Mike was assigned to report on the Bosnian War. Later, he covered the continuing fighting in Croatia, Macedonia, the Sudan, and other war zones around the world. A good journalist and cameraman, he also produced high-end documentaries on music and sports, but his specialty remained war reporting. It was fearful work, but Mike did it very well. In Iraq, from 2002 on, he filmed and interviewed 19 hours a day, without a break, for weeks at a time, while dodging IEDs and kidnapping attempts, often without military support. In 2004, his truck hit an IED, and Mike was hurled into the air, landing on his back. He was 3 weeks into the 6-week tour before he could get treatment for the resulting severe back pain. Eventually, the pain eased somewhat, but other issues remained. One was driving. This is common for veterans returning from Iraq and Afghanistan. While driving is a survival technique to avoid snipers and IEDs. By 2005, he was having extreme difficulty driving on highways, especially through tunnels and over bridges. In 2011, when he returned to the U.S., he never drove faster than 25 on the local streets. Every traffic light, every stop sign was a relief, time to catch his breath. But one day, on entering a tunnel, Mike had a sudden terrifying feeling that he could not control the car and an inexplicable urge to crash it into the wall. After that, his wife took over all driving.
A psychiatrist diagnosed fight-or-flight syndrome and prescribed beta blockers. They didn't help. I had a short fuse with people in general, but was terrified of police, probably due to having so many guns pointed at me by people in uniform throughout my career. Meanwhile, the thought of applying for a job was hopelessly overwhelming and intimidating. I was afraid to pick up the phone, afraid to call, afraid to speak with people.
Only sheer desperation over unpaid rent and bills drove him to approach a new company. Thanks to his extensive experience, he was hired on the spot, but on his first shoot, he couldn't remember how to operate the camera he had used for 12 years.
Some mornings I came in hours ahead of time just to practice with the camera. Even then, the film looked terrible because I was shaking so badly. I couldn't write, couldn't focus, was barely able to compose a single email per day. I couldn't believe how badly I was doing. I spent most of my time trying to hide my fears and challenges from other people.
To recap, Mike had a driving phobia, poor memory for conversations, radical loss of technical skills, severe irritability, hypervigilance, fatigue, problems finding words and speaking and writing, and he felt stuck and flat. Because of continuing back pain, he'd seen a physician who knew of Dr. Estes' neurofeedback study. He was accepted. Initial testing and evaluation by USUHS researchers revealed that he could not multiply or remember numbers. He failed the memory test so miserably, even they were shocked. Neurofeedback treatment began in October of 2012, 8 years after Mike's IED back injury. Session one triggered quite a bit of pain in Mike's injured back and ribs. Sensory flashbacks triggered by neurofeedback are common with injuries, but the flashbacks are never as severe as the original experiences, and they fade away quickly. This pain lasted only until that evening.
The next morning, the pain was not as strong as it usually was. Energy was great, and I felt rested. I couldn't remember what my wife said in a political discussion, but I wrote a new proposal, many emails, and finished all goals for the day. I drove fast on assignment, 84 miles per hour, without panic. By session three, I was seeing big changes. Energy levels had skyrocketed. Over sessions four through nine, I was really nervous, but there were no panic attacks, even in a difficult driving situation and facing some huge job stress. I cleaned up over 1,000 emails, something that I had really been wanting to do for a year. I taught at a conference, it went well, and I wasn't nervous. And then there were these vivid feelings about Iraq after speaking with a soldier who drove over an IED, but they only lasted for about a half hour. There are still some short-term memory lapses, but my energy, oh wow, I feel fantastic. Sessions 10 through 11, man, they were extremely productive. Clearer thinking, I was writing long concept emails and worked 40 hours in 2 days on a job. And now I'm going on an overseas assignment. Over sessions 12 through 14, the fear of the police had gone. I handled a press conference without fear for the first time ever, even though this used to be like one of the worst fears next to death. And now I can drive over bridges with no fear.
After session 13, Mike described the horror of seeing a friend killed by a blast. Study members are not required to talk or discuss their memories. However, session 13 is often when clients spontaneously bring up detailed descriptions of some trauma. During sessions 15 through 18, Mike was teaching, yet he reported feeling much calmer, making smarter decisions, and being able to think more strategically.
I'm not afraid anymore. I was weak. I was terrified of myself. Now I was able to operate some complicated equipment that I had never even seen before. And you know what? I did a superb job, something that I could never have done in the past. I can't comprehend how I was able to become that frail. I can't tell you how different my life is now.
By December, Mike was back to working on political campaigns, sports, and documentaries. He has now come back to life as a high-powered, full-speed professional in high demand for his excellent skills and high-quality professional productions. And he's driving at safe speeds.
David, a communications tech, joined the Army after 9/11 and served in combat areas and on border security. He survived multiple concussions, three in 2004 alone, multiple blasts from IEDs and ammo dump explosions, plus back and knee injuries with shrapnel and torn ligaments. After a 2006 explosion, he began to suffer severe insomnia. For many people with head injuries, sleep time becomes a tease and a torture rather than the healing and restorative pleasure it should be. A medic gave him a handful of pills, but when friends found them, he was sent to the Army's Lansdell Regional Medical Center, where he drank heavily, took any drugs he could find, and was repeatedly arrested for fighting. After a particularly wild night and facing four assault charges, he gave away his belongings and cleaned out the room. But a friend saw this classic pre-suicidal behavior. David was sent to the inpatient psychiatric ward, where he was diagnosed as bipolar with PTSD and post-concussion syndrome. Sedation with trazodone caused severe depression, which was treated with Effexor, which kept him from sleeping at all. It also caused seizures, so they gave him more trazodone. Instead of getting better, he got worse. He was shipped back to the U.S. and in a psych ward for PTSD and substance abuse, where he complained again about seizures from Effexor, and again the dose was increased. Drugs now included naproxen and nortriptyline for headaches with lithium to counteract the side effects, insomnia, agitation, anxiety from the nortriptyline, trazodone which produced depression, and Effexor to counteract the trazodone, Vistaril and Seroquel for anxiety, PTSD, insomnia, and the bipolar diagnosis. Eventually, all traditional methods of treatment had failed.
To call my prognosis unhopeful was an understatement. I was aggressive, paranoid, angry, depressed, unable to focus or take part in conversations, unable to read more than a few sentences. Sleep was an hour or two in 48 hours. I would leave my room only when forced to, for appointments, or rarely for food. Drug abuse and violent behavior continued, and I was still suicidal.
David was referred to Dr. Esty by his therapist, and of course was asked, how will you know you are better?
When I can be in a crowd for an extended period.
Even the first week of treatment, sessions 1 to 3, were remarkable, especially for someone who had been unable to sleep more than 1 or 2 hours over every 1 or 2 days.
After the first session, I felt wired, floaty, as if I'd taken Sudafed. The feeling lasted the rest of the day. I began sleeping at night, 6 amazing straight hours of uninterrupted sleep. And then I went to Borders Bookstore and found it relaxing. I was less vigilant, even able to read a magazine. Headache returned briefly after cleaning my room. I'm usually a pack-a-day smoker, but haven't had a cigarette in 48 hours.
By sessions 4 to 6, David was remembering dreams again, including one nightmare. He was able to fly home for a visit. Airports were still difficult, but his anxiety was so reduced that he didn't even need his anti-anxiety meds. Still irritable, but temper was under control. Soon he was leaving his room at Walter Reed and actually going out more, grocery shopping, to the movies. There were some headaches, but they were much less frequent than before.
By session 7, I was going out for pleasure. Besides, damn it, I have to feed myself. Previously, I would call someone to bring food.
David was emotional after this treatment. Some songs brought tears. But there was also less noise sensitivity, startle response, and in situations where he once would have blown up, he didn't even get angry. Memory is improving. It's more present, not flashbacks. Over sessions 10 to 19, everything good and holding.
On the weekend, I slept for 7 or 8 hours. I only woke once with a recurrent war-related nightmare. These are much less frequent now. There is also less fatigue, and I'm far less sensitive to light and sound. I walk several miles alone along a busy highway because I felt like being out, without sunglasses or headphones. I continue to go to the mall and be comfortable around people. I spent 5 hours at the bookstore with no headache. Any headaches that do come now are sharp but short, 15 to 20 minutes. I can even sit by windows and have stopped taking my anxiety meds.
The day before session 20 was the anniversary of the day that David lost half his platoon.
Now I remember so much. I'm not numb now. I have a life now. It still hurts, but without the searing pain and anger. It feels good to talk. Other people notice that I'm less scattered in my speech. In an argument, I was able to articulate my thoughts, something I hadn't been able to do since the last IED. Now I can just brush things off, I'm not angry anymore.
At session 25, the end of neurofeedback treatment, David was pleased at having no explosiveness and felt that his memory was better than before deployment. At a bar, he'd been able to socialize with no anxiety at all and talk about experiences without getting upset. He was going home with the goal of going back to school for a degree in psychology.
A few weeks after finishing the series, neuropsychology testing was repeated while David was ill and on cold medication. The examiner noted mild difficulties with extended concentration and variable processing speed, most likely exacerbated by the antihistamines he took to treat the cold. Nevertheless, most of his scores were above average or exceptional.
But most importantly, I felt like me again, the me before the deployments, before the physical and emotional trauma of war, but more mature than I was before it all. I had a real future, something to look forward to. I couldn't wait to get out and find a way to help other vets who found themselves in situations like mine. I just wanted to study neuropsychology with a specialty in PTSD.
David was discharged from the Army with 30% disability, a low rating. Medical paperwork states zero deficits after the neurofeedback treatments. That is, no remaining PTSD, no remaining cognitive deficits. Since then, the VA has officially amended his record to state that symptoms leading to diagnostic labels of bipolar type 2 and borderline personality disorders were actually side effects of Effexor and Trazodone. Back at school, majoring in chemistry with a psychology minor, he was declared Psychology Student of the Year and inducted into an academic honor society.
My biggest problem? Deciding what to do next. The neurofeedback treatments didn't just change my life, they saved my life.
Today, the wounded warrior with disabling insomnia and PTSD, whose goal of community college was viewed with skepticism, has gone on to advanced medical studies, completed a PhD, and is well on his way to his goal of helping others. From the viewpoint of a wounded veteran, this is a striking story. But consider the same story of brain injury followed by drug abuse, assault, escalating crime, rage, and despair from a civilian point of view. Brain injury is now known to be extremely high among juvenile offenders and their adult counterparts in the prison system. A growing movement is underway to actually test for TBI on intake, to treat, and hopefully to heal what is broken, to rescue these lost ones, to save lives and families. Neurofeedback has proven effective time after time when standard medications and drugs do not and cannot work. This has happened to others. It can happen to you. For more information, see www.brainwellnessandbiofeedback.com.